Hello, I'm Georgina Robinson.
And I'm Tom Deason.
Welcome to the Rugby World Cup Daily. Coming to you from Japan every day throughout the 2019 Rugby World Cup.
Hello, rugby fans. Welcome back to another episode of the Rugby World Cup Daily podcast, about day 16 or 17. It's Friday night here in Oita. We have navigated our way after a busy day on the eve of Australia's third match against Uruguay. Who did we just run into, G? Georgina Robinson, my colleague. Welcome.
Thank you, Tom. Decent. We are in, you're about to hear kickoff in the South Africa v Italy game. We're in the fan zone in Oita, which is actually an amazing open air, kind of like, feels like a street fair or food fair. And I just was standing behind Jerome Garces in the queue for a large Sapporo beer. And I introduced myself to him. When he looked around and saw me staring at him, I sort of said, "Oh, hello, are you Jerome?" And he said, "Yes." And then I didn't have the wherewithal to introduce myself, so I just thrust my media pass at him. Saw his shoulders drop. No, he looked up at me and shook my hand, and I said, "It's really great to see you out enjoying the tournament. Because aren't the refs copping it this tournament?"
Well, he's officiating Saturday's game.
Well, he's not. He's on the touchline. He's the assistant ref, yeah, with a fellow Frenchman. There's four of the little froggies officiating, or like test refs at the World Cup. It's the highest number. And Mathieu Reynal, who's only officiated the Wallabies twice, and both against Argentina in 2016, 2017. So they're teaming up, and it'll be interesting to see what we have. I think the Wallabies did confirm they had some back and forth with Alain Rolland this week.
Okay.
They wouldn't tell me what they talked about, what the issues were, but I'm going to take a wild guess and say that they asked for clarity around the breakdown, because Michael Hooper said at the captain's run press conference that Uruguay liked to come hard at the breakdown. And I also think they probably, if it wasn't that, then maybe they sought to clarify things about the ball carrier. Anyway, but it was really great to see Jerome Garces in his civvies.
Having definitely not a player preparation, as they would get absolute thrown under the bus if they were drinking the night before a game. But nice to see the referees maybe going closer on the journalist spectrum than perhaps the players.
Yeah, well, it's only like 6:30 in the evening here in Japan.
Of course,
so,
of course.
You know, a little settler the night before the game is nothing to hide from. I'm loving Oita. The stadium's fantastic and has a roof. So you actually sort of stood in there today. How do you think it's going to be? There was a lot of talk about, I hate to say it, but rugby balls that are slippery.
Well, it's not often the air that you talk about Michael Hooper joking that they might need to use sticky tape on their hands. The New Zealand-Canada game, it was quite slippery. There was a lot of ball handling errors. We know there was a lot of those in the Wales game in Tokyo as well. The Wallabies weren't completely polished there. So they already talked about how some of the jerseys might be a bit wet, so actually trying to carry the ball out in front of them as opposed to on their jersey, which is something you don't really talk about in Australia with conditions like we have back home. So that'll be a factor, of course. It'll be a test of whether they're, up to it, and just have to be very secure with the pill in hand. But out there, looks pretty cool. Sapporo wasn't super loud, I don't think, but obviously Tokyo was another level. I know that was an outdoor stadium. It was quite interesting at either end at the Oita Stadium. It looks like there is a bit of airflow that comes through the stadium. So it's not the biggest stadium of all time, but look, pretty cool nonetheless, and they're all just so different and so individual and unique, all the stadiums over here. A few gold jerseys floating around the streets of Oita tonight. A number of people have to stay in Beppu, which is a little bit north of here. We're in Yufu. We had our onsens last night, which were, I don't know about yours, and mine was quite enjoyable.
It was sublime. It was absolutely fantastic. And we had one of those great Rugby World Cup moments. We eventually made it to Yufu and then wandered into town and were told that it was a day-tripping town, basically. So people come in the morning by about 10 a.m. and then they're out by about sort of 6 p.m. on the last train back to the city. And we certainly saw that, because there was nothing open at sort of 9 o'clock or 8:30. We found the one bar open with, this is the beauty of a World Cup. There were three Frenchmen in there.
Yeah.
From the one village near Bordeaux, and then there were two different Australian couples, and then there was a Japanese
64-year-old guy who looked no joke 35.
That's the Asian diet and the genes. They age well, I gotta say.
Mm.
And then there was also a Japanese couple. He was a massive rugby fan, and we were using his account on ITV to live stream the game on Thursday night. So a tiny bar, there was no wine. The French were up in arms. They had to get a guy to deliver some wine to the bar, and it was just one of those great little nights that it wasn't a late one. We went home and had an onsen, but one of those special Rugby World Cup moments.
Like, cool.
Yeah, it was really good. But listen, back onto the footy. The Wallabies are really facing a lot of questions about the whinging.
Yeah.
And the, you know, us against them mentality, not just from Australian media, from everyone. You know, it was kind of 2 weeks of this narrative about how hard done by they were. And, we've talked about it on the pod. We asked Matt Tamua earlier in the week about whether the team inside actually believes that they're, you know, that it's them against the world, and Matt said no, we're just getting on with business. But it came up in question from, I think, an English or a British journalist today, who basically posed the same question to Michael Hooper, and again he said no, you know, that's all the chat out there. I know a lot said about it, but inside we're just focusing on what we need to change. So the funny thing, it kind of begs the question then, why go on about it? Because no one's generating this but the team themselves. I mean, we had basically, what, 3 or 4 days in a row of constant commentary, constant responses from the team about how hard done by they were.
I feel Samu would have been very, very, very... It would have been very difficult for him to bite his tongue when asked, you know, less than an hour after that game, a loss, which they'd been eyeing all their focus to not want to talk about that incident involving him. Like, and I can understand him just...
Especially if he felt like that had cost the team.
Of course.
Yeah. But the next day he got up again at, you know, the 10 a.m. opportunity on the Sunday and doubled down on it all, did he not?
Absolutely. Went into far more detail about it. Just the nature of the beast, and of course you're going to ask him those questions, but it kicks along the story for another day.
I mean, we certainly know that they can shut down lines of questioning, and
happened?
South Africa have scored and do so on a regular basis. If Michael Hooper doesn't want to talk about something, he doesn't. But I asked him, I kind of, because they've also copped it from, interestingly, from the New Zealand media. Robbie Deans in a column raised the question. It was almost like the last line of the column, wasn't it? But he said, yeah, when the coach talks about that constantly in the media, it does seep into the team. And you know, we've also written this week about the test referee, Glenn Jackson, who's back in New Zealand at the moment, a couple of All Blacks, talking about that snowballing effect of the us against them mentality and that victim sort of headspace. And actually, Glenn Jackson really singled out Michael Hooper and said he's a great captain. He's one of the really good ones in terms of dealing with referees. But he saw things in that Wales loss that made him think maybe even Hoops is taking on, you know, that worldview of, you know, that Michael Checker at least publicly likes to propagate.
Yeah, and he explained, I mean, you pressed him on it, but he was all but trying to at least say whether he was answering the question or that he was just frustrated. His frustrations boiled over.
Yeah, because after that game, I mean, I haven't seen Michael Hooper like that. At one stage, firstly, I mean, what an attritional match. He was bruised and battered. And second week in a row, I mean, he was even more bruised and battered against after Fiji. But yeah. He asked for a jacket because the room was air conditioned, and the media manager gave him a jacket, and then he struggled to get it on, and, you know, it basically looked like he was about to chuck it across the room, slap it down, was so annoyed, and kind of said, "This is the worst jacket you could possibly give me." Not actually at the media manager, but sort of, you know, into the ether. So this was a captain. We don't see it from Hoops. Hoops is the captain who is always under control, is always circumspect. And you know, this wasn't a Michael Checker kind of eruption, but it was just little things that showed you that whatever happened in that game really pushed Michael Hooper to the edge. So almost a week later, 5 days later, 6 days later, was the next opportunity we had to talk to him. And I said, how are you feeling now and what was happening there? And to his credit, this is where he's really impressive. He answered, he said, I really wanted to win that game. And we were almost there and we didn't. And, you know, we get them, what, 30 minutes after a match? And he said, but I've moved on and we're fully aware of what we need to do, you know, against Uruguay. So it was interesting. Michael Hooper doesn't give you that insight into his, you know, how he's actually feeling, his inner life. So it was kind of nice as a journalist to see, you know, a couple of cracks in the Hooper armour.
Boxes have been ticked, so follow the process. We are here.
Tommy, you're sounding cynical for game three of the pool stages.
No. That's what we hear every week. Even Checker at times has said he doesn't even know what the process is. So that's one of the funny words when you hear that in a press conference. But look, Uruguay game three, I think the line's about 50 points. So look, if anyone thinks the Uruguay are going to win this, let's get fair dinkum, they're not going to. Obviously, they knocked off Fiji, but look, the wet ball stuff, if that does come into play and they can't actually, you know, play a little bit of, with a bit of width as you would expect them to, that may be closer and they'll just be happy to get 4 tries, come away with a bonus point and give themselves the best chance of being there if Wales do fall up to Fiji. So I'll tip them by 43 points. What do you think? Not as confident?
I'll tip them by 40-something.
Give me a number. 40-something?
No, I'm not going to be pushed into this.
Okay, all good, all good.
On the podcast with your tipping requests. But I do think they, you know, surely Australia have to show us they can fix up that the slow starts they've been getting off to. And I also think that 40-something is what they need to do to, and I've written it in Saturday's Sydney Morning Herald, that's what they need to have, that kind of margin to lay any claim to still being World Cup contenders after losing a close one to Wales.
And if they do that, then the drums will beat for a similar team to roll out against Georgia, which is probably not going to happen given the personnel changes, but at least in the back line there is a view held by many people that you pick and stick your halves at this point in time. Rotate obviously Will and Nick, but just try and, if Christian is your man, keep him there. Give him as much continuity as you can going into what is going to be a pretty big quarterfinal regardless.
Hey, we uncovered a nice little link between Australia and Uruguay, or the current Uruguay setup.
Yeah.
Their attack coach, Joaquin Pastore, is a Uruguayan international and came off the bench as a midfielder in Uruguay's 2003 World Cup win against Georgia at the Sydney Football Stadium, in those days known as Aussie Stadium. So I did a little trawl through the archives and found some choice photographic evidence. And I have to apologise to Jack Goodhue, who we sledged cruelly about his mullet, because Joaquin Pastore, circa 2003, had one of the roughest hairdos I have ever seen on a rugby pitch.
And he's bald as a badger nowadays, so clearly things were going for him a little bit more in his younger days. We have a pretty strong cauliflower tomorrow. A bit of news that might prick the interest of some English journos, our friends in the UK press, that Eddie Jones, the England coach, is planning to go home for the funeral of Geoffrey Sale in Sydney. Now, quite newsworthy, because on next Friday is the funeral service, which is going to be happening in Sydney. And we obviously know Eddie was quite emotional this week talking about Geoffrey Sale, a mentor who's, you know, was a ball boy at Randwick when he was 10 years old and has been at the club for more than 60 odd years. And, you know, all the stories this week and, you know, tributes to him have been very, very lovely. But there's a plan being hatched for him to leave Japan a few days out from their biggest game of the pool stages against France, before coming back for that France game so he can pay tribute. We pressed Eddie on it and we've written a story about it. So
he's confirmed he's trying to make it work, hasn't he?
He is. You know, we understand that the RFU have said that is okay, whether or not the flights have been booked or not. But look, if England beat Argentina on Saturday, they'll be guaranteed a spot in the quarterfinals, which they probably are already mathematically now I think about it. But that France game is definitely their biggest game of the pools. Him going out would mean that he would miss captain's run on the Friday in Yokohama, but he would ideally, you know, if we're just spitballing, get a flight back and maybe a red eye on the Friday night be back in Sydney, back in Yokohama for a 5, 6 o'clock kickoff, which would be a great story if true. And it just shows, I guess, what Jeffrey Sale means to him. And, you know, we would have no doubt that Michael Checker would be going back, but the Wallabies play Georgia on that Friday that his memorial service is happening. And Simon Poitevin tells me it's going to be the biggest funeral the Coogee's ever seen. So we expect hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people to show up for that, to pay their respects to the great Jeffrey Sale.
And it'd have to be a big one to top Lloyd McDermott's, actually.
Yeah.
That was a really huge funeral as well. Yeah. That's a, it's a lovely moving gesture. I'd be interested to see what the English media make of Eddie's last sort of emergency trip back to Australia. We can keep you informed on that on the website, rugbyheaven.com.au, and in print and on this podcast, Rugby World Cup Daily. Is there anything else doing at this World Cup at the moment? Apart from Jerome Garces on the source behind us. No, he's not.
Who we think was maybe trying to avoid us once he worked out we were still having our lanyards around our necks.
After I thrust my lanyard into his face.
Look, there'll be a lot of wash up on Saturday after some games, some pretty big games there. Look, I reckon we get stuck into it. It's a Friday night. If you're listening to the podcast, you are dedicated.com. And obviously, maybe you'll pick this up on a Saturday morning. But look, we'll have all the wash up from what we believe both will be a big Wallabies win, a lot to talk about, probably the start of some fair dinkum momentum towards that quarter final, which they won't talk about yet, but everyone is licking their lips at, possibly against England, provided all things go the way that they have panned out. Any last thoughts, G, before we have a beer?
No, just wondering wondering when you're going to hurry up and get us the next one. Oh, it was your shout the first one, wasn't it?
Yeah, I bought the first one as per normal. Get the younger pup to bite. All good. Thanks for listening, rugby fans. Hit us up on Twitter. We'll be, filing some gold or silver or bronze from the game.
Yeah, and sorry, just one more thing I've copped on. We really love the discussion that was generated by the American Rugby World Cup bid story. Great to see that a lot of people would really love to see it in the US, just not at the expense of Australia. So I think the consensus, from the Rugby World Cup Daily listeners, from you guys, is that it's 2027 for Australia and 2031 in US of A, which would be really cool. And I would be all over a Californian fall.
Absolutely. What a country.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you again tomorrow. See you later.
Sayonara.